If I say poet, what kind of person comes to mind? Emily Dickinson in her white dress? Robert Frost with his horse in someone else's snowy woods? Or maybe someone still alive, like Rita Dove or Richard Blanco? They're all part of the canon, major poets with established reputations. But who's next? Aren't there some edgy, boundary-breaking poets we should be reading? Well, Stephen Burt is the person to ask. The young Harvard professor who's considered the leading poetry critic of a new generation and who's been making a conscious effort to introduce new and different voices to the canon. Stephen's just come out with a new anthology called The Poem Is You and stopped by our studio to talk with our Steve Paulson.
Yeah, and so you should talk sort of be facing into the mic, obviously.
And slow down a little bit because it's radio.
Don't worry. Just be yourself. You don't have to slow down.
Okay.
That's fine.
Names and pronouns and things. Stephen or Steph in person. And I like they if you're comfortable with it, but...
I want to ask you about this.
Okay.
So...
Are we recording?
We are. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So do you go more by Stephen or more by Steph?
I prefer Steph, but Stephen is just fine. And all the books say Stephen. And it's... not a favor to your publishers or to readers who will never meet you if you say, now that I'm out as somebody who's a girl inside, somebody who's got two genders, you've got to go and change the name on all my books. People do that, of course. Trans people who make full social and legal transitions, of course, do that. And one of my favorite comic book artists, Sophie Campbell, who is out as a trans lady, came out after she had begun her comic book career, and her comic book publisher obligingly went and reprinted her early work so that her correct name, Sophie, is now on all of them.
That's dedication there.
Well, it's actually just politeness. If you're a comic book company and you can afford to do that, you
right.
should if your author requests it. But it turns out I don't need that. I'm Stephen and Steph, and I'm a boy and a girl, and I have two genders, and that's my life.
And you do some poems. You've written some poems in the voice
yes.
of Stephanie, right?
Yeah. I have a chapbook, which is a short staple-bound book. It's like an EP instead of an LP, if you're a music person, called All Season Stephanie, which I'm very happy with, that is a series of poems about what my memories and my life would have been like had I grown up as a girl, had I been raised as a girl. And some of those are going to be in the next full-length collection of my own poems, which comes out next year. But yeah, I also answer to Stephanie. That's great. But I don't need to ask everyone who works with me professionally or who knows me personally to change what they do in the way that many trans people do ask and, you know, should be honored. But
yeah.
Stephen and Steph and Stephanie, they're all me. And the books say Stephen. So far.
Yeah. And it seems that this is relevant, what we're talking about, to your project, because, I mean, what you do as a poetry critic is you're trying to bring to wider attention poets with lots of different identities, lots of different backgrounds, different voices. Is that a fair thing to say?
It is fair. And it may be that having more than the usual number of genders and more than the usual number of identities might help me be a better reader, as when I'm wearing my critic hat, which I am for this book, The Poem Is You.
So let's get a taste of this. So
yeah,
from your book. You put together this anthology of 60 poems, all written by Americans since 1980, from a wide variety.
I hope so, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
And read one or two, and you've also written essays about each of these poems.
Yes, yes. The book is 60 poems and an essay about how to read each one, what's going on in each one, why I like each one. And for the ones that are very challenging or far from prose sense, I try to help it make sense. And for the ones that are more straightforward, I say other things that I hope will help you like them. So this is by one of my favorite mid-career poets. She's based in Michigan. She's been in Michigan, I think, almost her whole life. And she's also a novelist, but for me, the real distinction lies with her poetry, and this is a relatively recent poem. Her name is Laura Kosciuszko, and this is part of a series of poems about allegorical people who are modern women who are competing in imaginary pageants. And this one is called Miss Weariness. At first, she looked like all the other girls, but then the chipped fingernail, and then she sat down in a folding chair and let the other girls pass by in their ball gowns, in their bathing suits, in their beatific smiles, but she had tossed her heels aside. Enough of industry, enough of goals and troubles, looking ahead, grooming and dreaming, and anything that ended in ing in this life ever again, she said. Oh, enough even of the simple stuff. The will-o'-the-wisp, the rain on a lake, all those goldfish in their plastic baggies at the fair. To them, it must have been as if the world were divided into small, warped dreams, nowhere to get to and nothing to do but swim.
Wow.
Yeah, that just gets you. You know, not all contemporary American poems are that sharp or that sad. It's super sad. And it's super sad because it speaks to three different reasons why many of us are sad. One is the feeling that we've all had of futility of where am I going? One is a feeling specific, I think, to middle class and privileged teens that were sort of being tested to death and prepared and prepared and prepared to get into the right college, to choose the right major, to choose the right life, and especially for girls, to look the right way while you're doing it. And then a third feeling that I think is part of this poem, and I write about this in the essay, is a feeling that's about parenthood and professional life, in particular for women, though not only for women, where you're never off duty, where you always have something you're supposed to do and to look good while doing it. It's what the sociologist Arlie Hochschild called the second shift, where you go home and you have more to do. And the expectations of daily life are just really tiring. And these are feelings that you can write about as an essayist or as a novelist. And Kosciuszko has put them in some of her novels, and some of her novels are terrific. But she's able to put them into her poems using techniques that she invented. There's end rhyme, lines rhyme, and there's a great deal of internal rhyme. And there's a sense of closure when that last rhyme or set of half rhymes, them, dreams, swim, bin, which is a vowel rhyme, show up. There's a lot of closure, but the rhymes, you don't know when the rhymes are coming. The lines are very, what we call, enjambed. They're broken in places that aren't sort of natural to break them. And so it's very unsettling. You don't know when your life will come together, when the pattern that makes it all worthwhile will emerge, or if one will ever emerge, or if you're just going to be swimming like those goldfish at the fair forever. And it is extremely intricate when you reread it, even though it's, I think, immediate and raw in its sadness when you read it. It's really one of those poems that hits you one way the first time and another way the 10th time, which when I'm asked what makes a poem great, what I say is I think a poem is great when you can read it 20 times and be glad you've done that and still get new things out of it. And Miss Weariness by Laura Kosciuszko is another one.
You read us one poem from your anthology. How about another one?
This is a poet who, by virtue of putting together this book, I learned more about and came to like more. And she writes out of demographic experience and social experience that I largely haven't had. And I sort of learned more about what she was doing. And I hope I've done justice to the poem. It's a poet who's been tremendously influential, who died relatively recently after a long career that also included writing children's books and writing for the musical Free to Be You and Me. She was involved in that. Again, not just a poet, but she's certainly best known for her poems. And the poet is Lucille Clifton. And this is a poem from a series of short poems that she published in the 80s and was called My Dream About the Second Coming. Mary is an old woman without shoes. She doesn't believe it. Not when her belly starts to bubble and leave the print of a finger where no man touches. Not when the snow in her hair melts away. Not when the stranger she used to wait for appears dressed in lights at her kitchen table. She is an old woman and doesn't believe it. When something drops onto her toes one night, she calls it a fox, but she feeds it. Now, people who talk about Lucille Clifton at length and who write about her as an influence write about her place in an African-American demotic tradition that also includes Hughes, that includes the later Gwendolyn Brooks. She would have been happy with that. And they talk about often her relation to African-American feminism and womanism, which is a term that I think Alice Walker coined to distinguish black feminism from white-led feminism in the 70s. And that's part of what Lucille Clifton's trying to do. And that is in this poem. This is a poem about maternal empowerment. It's also a poem about other and partly European traditions of painting and writing that Clifton is taking part in. It is an annunciation poem. There are a lot of good enunciation poems from the past few decades. Jory Graham wrote one of my favorites.
When you talk about an enunciation,
The enunciation with a capital A is an event in sort of Christian mythography and in sort of Christian stories where the angel Gabriel shows up and tells the Virgin Mary, you know, I know you're a virgin, but you're going to have a baby anyway, and he's going to be God. And this is a popular scene with medieval and Renaissance painters and with contemporary poets who are investigating motherhood in a way that most previous generations of English language poets mostly didn't do.
As a critic, who do you see as your audience? I mean, are you mainly writing for people who are in the poetry community, or is it the wider public, people who really might not read much poetry at all?
Well, this book is for the wider community. I do write other things that are for smaller audiences. I write for blogs. I write for magazines that have 2,000-person circulation. So I do write other kinds of things. When you are writing for a larger audience, you know that not everybody who reads you is going to go out and drop $60 at their local independent bookstore on 3 new books of poetry. Many people use their library cards, right? If you have a library card, it's free. I don't know how many people are going to go read a lot of one or another poet I recommend, but I do think that it's a non-zero amount, and I've been doing this long enough, I sometimes get email that says, thank you for turning me on to this poet or that poet. So I think of myself as an introducer, as a kind of party host almost, as well as an explainer, an explicator, someone making arguments, and also in a way as a DJ.
Do you think we need poetry, I mean, as a society, as a culture, or is it sort of, it's a great thing if you like it, or is it more essential than that?
Well, I need poetry. I need poetry. A lot of people need poetry, though they don't all need the same poems. And it's okay if you don't like poetry. It's okay if that's not the art form for you. But I do think there are some people for whom it matters a lot, and maybe more people for whom it could matter if they encountered the poems that spoke to them. And part of my work as a public critic writing books like The Poem Is You is to say, you know, if you're curious, if you've got a few poems you like, but you don't know where to go next, or you don't know what's going on now, or you want to try this stuff out, here's a lot of poems, and I hope some of them work for you.
Stephen Bird is the leading critic of a new generation of poets and author of The Poem Is You, 60 Contemporary American Poems and How to Read Them. Stephen talked with our own Steve Paulson in our studios in Madison.